myself, which, you know, it's not a big deal, I guess. So as long as you guys can hear me, that's the most important thing. I forgot to get this in the announcement part of it, but we sent down Christmas cards for Claus and Joanne Melbourne. Joe helped organize that, Claus and Joanne Miller. They said they want to have everybody come visit at the same weekend, is what they told me. So we're going to plan that. No, this is what they sent to us. They want to thank you all for the Christmas cards hand-delivered by Joe and Melba. They were a special treat, and we cherish them. He says, our doors are open for visitors, probably spaced out a little bit more than everybody at once. But that's Claus and Joanne Miller. Obviously, we miss them, and appreciate you guys organizing that and put that in together, too. So I wanted to make sure that we got that announced. So what you're going to do quick, you've got about 2 minutes, and we usually do this fifth Sundays, but we're going to do it this morning because it worked well for what I want to do. So why don't you take a minute, 2 minutes actually, to talk to your neighbor. If you feel like you want to get up and move around a little bit, that's all right. If you don't like your neighbor or whatever, that's fine with me. I'm all right with that. But just find a little bit of maybe just talk for just a minute with others. And the question you're going to answer or talk about is, what's my rich person problem? What's my rich person problem? So it's something you said, something you did, a complaint that you made in the last day or week, last couple hours, probably for most of us, actually, that you complained about. Something, I don't know, whatever you think that looks like for you, your rich person problem. So 2 minutes, talk about it. I may call on you, so you may want to steal your neighbor's answer. So, all right, go ahead. What's my rich person problem? If you're having problems, rich people problems are problems that rich people have that other people may not have. Okay, rich people have this XYZ problem, whereas someone that's not rich wouldn't have that problem, if that helps any. Maybe a problem that someone 100 years ago wouldn't have that we have in our culture today. People in Africa wouldn't have a problem that we wouldn't have in our culture, that we have in our culture. All right, does anybody, I don't know if that's 2 minutes or not, but it's close. Does anybody want to share a rich person problem? You seem so willing. No? Okay. Anybody want to share a rich person problem?
I don't get in the shower before you.
Don't get enough hot water. That's fair enough. I do like lengthy showers, so I'll take the blame on that one. It's a good one. Anybody else? Too much stuff. That's absolutely true. That's a rich person problem for sure. All right, maybe these fit your list here. All right, here's some other ones. This isn't my list. I stole this, so don't get mad at me. All right, maybe it's bad cell phone reception. Anybody complain about that ever? Right, especially between Summum and Lewiston. I cannot stream music during those times. So that's my one of my rich person problems. Your kid's teacher didn't call you back. That might be a rich person problem. Limited vacation time. Computer crashes, right? No one's complained about a computer crashing, I don't think, ever. Slow internet, that's definitely a rich person problem. Your long wait at the grocery store, right? I had to sit at Aldi for a whole, 3 minutes in line. It's terrible. Cost more money, we're spending more money to fill up our cars, right? Or our second car, or our third car, maybe for some of us. Right? Rising medical cost, all sorts of rich people problems, right? You guys probably think of some more now that you heard this list. But we have lots of problems, and they're rich people problems. And that doesn't mean they're unimportant, okay? I just want to make sure I'm clear on that. Just because it's a rich person problem doesn't mean that it's not frustrating, right? And doesn't mean that it's not important. But I think it's important for us to kind of put it in light of where we're at, right? Especially in terms of our culture, our world, and in terms of history, too, right? We have a lot more of these kind of problems than they did 50 even. You know, we didn't have worry about cell phone reception even, what, 20 years ago even, and some of those kind of things. And so, not that they're not frustrating, but I think it's important for us to kind of get it used to knowing that those are rich people problems, to own it. Maybe even start a sentence by saying, okay, I have a rich person problem, and then finish the sentence, right? Do you want to practice that? Should we all work on that together this morning? No? Okay, sorry, we won't. But you guys work on that on your own, right? I have a rich person problem. My cell phone doesn't work between, you know, Summum and Lewiston, right? And, you know, all those kind of things that we worry and complain about. But, again, it's where we're at. It's the culture we live in. It's the world we live in. And we have those. And, again, they're frustrating and they're hard. But hopefully we can begin to realize the purpose behind it, that where we are in our world and how we fit in and some of the things that we have. We're in our last week of our sermon series called How to Be Rich, or just Be Rich, I guess. How to Be Rich. And I'm done trying to convince you that you're rich, okay? I give up. If you don't think that you're rich by now, I throw up my hands up. I got my white flag. I'll wave that for you. But if you don't think you are, I'll let you worry about that. But I would say all of us in this room are in that category. We're rich, especially in terms of culture or in terms of our world. And so in light of that, we've been talking about some side effects, things that happen because we are rich. And the main one and the one we focused on the most was this one we call the migration of hope. This migration of hope that shifts from God, from the eternal, from the forever, to things that are temporary, things that are fleeting, things that are possessions and wealth and money. And so we've been talking about that, and we looked at 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17, and we asked the question, well, why would you put your hope in riches when you can put your hope in the one who richly provides? And I just think that's such a great question to ask ourselves. Why do we put our hope in our money and our wealth and the things of this world when we can trust and put our hope in the one that has provided those things? And then we talked a couple weeks ago about wrestling with that question. We talked about in verse 18 of 1 Timothy chapter 6 to say, well, how do we stop that? And really basically what he says, do more and give more. Do more and give more are kind of the main ideas behind how do we stop this migration of hope. We pre-decide. Last week we talked about how we give the first fruits, and we looked at the story of Cain and Abel. And how Abel brought the first and the best and the fat portions, and Cain just brought some of the offering. And we talked about giving a percentage, 5, 6, 10, 20, 50%, whatever that looks like for you, and to give it first. We get a paycheck, we write a check, we give some money to the church, to an organization, to God, to someone in need in some way. And so we've been talking about how we set an amount, we're purposefully and preferentially giving back to God and the things that he's provided us. And so we are concluding this week with this sermon series by finishing up this passage. We're looking at verse 19 of 1 Timothy chapter 6. And we're going to kind of wrap the whole thing up in a little bowl. We're going to also use some of the words of Jesus here down the road, because I like listening to Jesus most of the time. So we're going to look at some words of Jesus and just see some of the depth of what we can do and how we can continue to look at this migration of hope and where we're at moving forward from here as well. So if you've got 1 Timothy chapter 6, we're going to review 17 and 18 and then jump into 19. But I want you to pay attention to verse 17. He says something there right away that we probably glossed over. We didn't talk about it a couple weeks ago when we looked at this. And it's such an important part of this passage. He says something right away that kind of gives us an idea of what he's going to tell us in verse 19. And so here's what he says in verse 17. He says, as for the rich in this present age. As for the rich in this present age. Did you guys catch that? Or we could maybe replace the word age with world. There's other translations that use the word world. Right? That there's a significance there. There's a mentality, because if there's a present age, if there's a present world, then that means there's something not of this world. There's something beyond this. There's a future age. There's a future world. And I think that's significant to keep in mind as we look forward and move forward. And if you're a sci-fi person like me, my mind starts racing about other worlds, right? There's multiple dimensions and split universes. I don't know if you guys ever read the controversial books of The Golden Compass. There was a lot of the jump between all these different kinds of worlds. And I imagine, you know, in other worlds, what I would be like, you know, in a post-apocalyptic world and, you know, something else. And, you know, I don't know. I love those kind of things. So we won't go too far down that road. But there's just thinking about, he says there's a present age. There's a present world. That means that there's a future age or there's a different world. There's something beyond this. And so he continues here in verse 17. As for the rich in this present age, he says, charge them not to be haughty or arrogant. He says, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. We got that question that we asked earlier from that. And he says in verse 18, they are, these rich in this present age, are to do good. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, and to be generous and ready to share. So the next verse that we're going to look at is going to show us, going to reveal to us more of what's around us. And when I read this passage and when I looked and studied this passage, it didn't necessarily, the specifics of what to do or the practical things in here didn't necessarily affect me as much as the mentality behind them. What is Paul trying to get us to think about in these words and in this passage here? And so in this way, he continues in verse 19. He says, in verse 18, he says, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share. He says, thus storing up for themselves, or treasure for themselves, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future or the coming age, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. Storing up treasure for themselves is a good foundation for the future of the coming age. And there are passages like this that are in, Jesus uses it, this idea of reward, this idea of blessing in the future. And I was wrestling with this week, as I've wrestled with it in the past too, and trying to figure out, it kind of sounds like here and in other places that we can read in the New Testament especially, that there is a distinction between preferences or benefits or blessings or something for those of us for heaven, right? It almost sounds like if we do the right things or we give the right way or we live in a certain way according to the standards here, that some of us might have like bigger mansions in heaven, right? I don't know if you guys have heard something along those lines. I think I've heard pastors say those kind of things, right? You might have a bigger mansion, or you'll have a special status, or, you know, different things will look better for you if you do, you know, live a certain way and all these kind of things. And I struggle with that because when I think of heaven, my basic definition of heaven is that's where God is, right? Heaven is where God is in his fullness and his completeness, right? When I get to heaven and I am with God in his presence, I don't think anything else is going to matter, right? I'm not going to care if I, you know, my TV is, you know, if I have a TV in heaven, which I assume I will because, I don't know, I just think that'd be great. But, you know, I don't care if my TV is 30 inches, you know, or if it's, you know, a plasma, you know, like a, how big do they make TVs? 70, 90 inches? I don't know how big they make them anymore, right? I'm not going to care when I'm with God how big my house is, right? Just let me sleep, you know, if I sleep on a gold-paved street, that's better than, you know, I don't know, that doesn't sound comfortable now that I think about it. But, you know, there's worse places to sleep. Like, you know what I mean? I just don't think I'm going to care too much if I have, you know, if somebody else has a little better status, whatever that looks like, than I do. And so when I wrestle with that, and I think, you know, I think God's kind of would think the same way. You know, if we're in heaven, we're with God, I'm not going to care about, you know, this or that or anything. I'm not going to have the same emotions in the same way, I don't think, as I do now. And so in my wrestling and in my struggle and working through this, I think I figured out, at least for me it makes sense, what Paul is trying to say, what other people are trying to say, Jesus and others are trying to say when they talk about a reward, when they talk about, you know, building a foundation for the future. And for me, it really is more about now. It is really more about what I'm doing here and what that means moving forward. I think the foundation that he's talking about is a foundation that we start and build here, right? When I have a mentality that is future focused, when I'm thinking of heavenly things, when I'm thinking of eternal things, rather than focusing on, you know, the, you know, TV. Obviously, I'm really concerned about TVs, but, you know, the things of this world. If my focus is on those, then I'm not going to be preparing myself for the eternal. But if my focus is eternal, if my focus is forever, and then in this life, I'm going to be building that foundation. And I think that foundation, I think those rewards do continue into the next life. but they really are more about what I'm doing now and what my mentality and what my heart is now. And so to me, looking at these verses, it's not really even about what's going to happen in the future, but it's having a mentality that is future-focused. And so in this world and in this place, my heart, my mind, everything is being drawn closer to God. And when I'm being drawn closer to God here, I'm preparing myself for being with him completely forever. And I don't know, maybe that doesn't make a lot of sense to you. If it doesn't, feel free to give me a call or email me this week and I'll ramble on again. But this idea of looking and changing our focus, because so often when we do think about the future we think about is retirement future, right? Does any, maybe some of you are in retirement future, but for me that's a lot of my focus is retirement future. Or maybe even, you know, for me it's tomorrow future, because tomorrow's my day off and I'm going to rest quite a bit. So, you know, our future isn't real far down the road. Even if it's retirement future for some of us, you know, maybe that's 10 years or 5 years or 30 years or whatever it is, that's still not far enough. Whereas God says, and Paul is saying here, that when we change our mentality from the present world to the future world, something in our heart should change too. And I think we get this a little bit more detail if we jump to Luke chapter 12. So if you got your Bibles and want to jump to Luke chapter 12, Jesus shares this parable. And a parable, we know, is just a story to make a point. And this is a made-up story, and Jesus makes up a lot of stories, but these stories, these parables, really just are a story told to make a point. And his point here, I think, is really clear and really poignant in a lot of ways. But in Luke chapter 12, we see in verse 16, Jesus outlining this story, I think, that is really important for us to hear. And so starting in verse 16, Jesus says this. He says, The land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And I'm sure most of us are like, we feel so sorry for you, right? This rich man, he has a bumper crop. He has so much more money that he doesn't, you know, doesn't know what to do with all of it. And all of us are, you know, we should say it together, poor you, right? We all feel sorry for him. Terrible, terrible burden. This is the original rich person problem. So if he was in our group and talking with you, he would have said, my problem is I don't have enough place to store all of this stuff I produced, right? This is the original rich person problem. There's probably actually further back, but right, he has these terrible circumstances that he's in. And so he has to figure out, what is he going to do? What am I going to do? And this is what his decision is. He says, I will tear down my barns and I will build larger ones. And there I will store all of my grain and my goods. And to be honest with you, I don't know if we have a problem with that, right? Isn't that kind of the American mindset, right? I have too much stuff. I need to buy a bigger house. I need to buy a bigger, you know, I need a bigger garage. And I need to have all, you know, I need to build bigger barns to be able to store all of my stuff. That's kind of our mentality. And in a lot of ways, there's probably nothing wrong with that. I don't think that Jesus rebukes the man's building of bigger barns to store his stuff. I mean, his rebuke is going to come for some other reason. But again, technically, there's probably not anything wrong with this. But I also want to make this as a side point, right? So you can kind of hold on to this. Can you guys do that? Hold this in this side of your brain and use this side of your brain for just a second. A lot of times we get caught up in the right and wrong mentality, right? There's nothing wrong with building a bigger barn, right? Or building a bigger house, or, you know, adding another stall to your garage or something. There's nothing wrong with that, per se. But the mentality behind what Jesus, I think, is saying is that it's not necessarily just about right and wrong, about do's and don'ts. It's about what's another step beyond that. What's another step beyond that? And I think for me it makes most sense when I think about relationships, right? I could be right if I'm in a, someone hurts me, and I can be right to forgive them. I forgive them in my heart, and I just move on, right? That can be right. That can be good. The next step might be I need to go and I need to talk to them and say, okay, I forgive you. This is where it hurt me, and I want to forgive you, right? And I think a lot of us say, well, that's a good stop. That's a good line to stop there, right? That might be the next line. But I would say that Jesus would challenge us and say, not only do you forgive him in your heart, not only do you go and you talk to him and reconcile this, but you find a way to build a relationship from that, right? I think a lot of us would say, okay, I forgive him in my heart. I've worked it out. I don't need to worry about or talk to them ever again, right? Or I can just say hi to them as I see them on the street. But I would say a Jesus mentality of relationship is to take another step. Well, how can I, from this broken, hurt relationship, grow something even better? And I think that's what Jesus is saying here too, is that he may not be wrong in what he's building. He may not be wrong in having more things, of building bigger barns. But is there? But just because it's not wrong, does that necessarily mean it's right? And I would even say, does that make it Jesus right? And I'm going to coin that phrase, because there's not just right and wrong, there's Jesus right too, which I think is another step beyond that. Okay, you've heard me there. Is that legally binding if I patent that here this morning with you guys? If anyone else uses it, you owe me a quarter. Okay, so we're just going to go with that. So this is what he ends up doing. In verse 19, he continues this. He's building these bigger barns, and this is what he's going to say. He says to his soul, "Soul, you have ample goods laid up for years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry." That just sounds so good, right? I just want to kind of hang on these verses and just rest, because it just sounds peaceful, right? I'm going to rest. I'm just going to enjoy life, eat, drink, and be merry. I think of a beach, right? I've got a drink with an umbrella in it, and I don't know why I said beach, because that's not me. That's just someone else's image of what's peaceful. I am, you know, sitting and watching a movie in my basement or something like that. I don't know what my peaceful area is, but, you know, we're restful and relaxed. That just sounds great. That just sounds so wonderful. And it's really our mentality towards life, and I think his mentality, which we talked a little bit about last week, it's a problem I think that all of us have. And I want to kind of use this phrase, and this isn't my phrase, so I can't patent it or coin it this morning, but it's this idea of when something comes to me, I'm going to assume that it's for me to use. And it's been coined or been called the consumption assumption. Consumption assumption. And when I think here consumption assumption, I think of the song Conjunction Junction. Thank you. Conjunction, somebody's singing it. From Schoolhouse Rock, so some of you know what it is. Conjunction Junction, what's your function? And I tried to fit those words into that, and it doesn't work. So if you can figure out how to get that to be a nice little song, that'd be great. But consumption assumption, we're assuming that what I get it when I receive it is for me to use. It came into my possession, it's for me to use however I want. And even for this rich man who's going to save it and store it for a while, he still falls into this consumption assumption, because it's not maybe using it right away, but it's my use later on. Right, I'm not consuming it right away, but I'm going to save it to consume it later. It's mine to use. It's this consumption assumption. And the thing about consumption assumption is that there's something about my heart that gets tied into this. It gets tied up into the things that we're doing in this mentality that we have. And God's going to have a response. Jesus is going to have a response for this mentality of consumption assumption. I think the next slide says save it now, consume it later. There it is. This mentality of saving it now, consuming it later, is just the delayed consumption assumption idea. But God's going to have a response. He's going to tell his audience, he's going to tell this man something about this mentality, this consumption assumption. In verse 20, he says, Fool, this night your soul is required of you. And I kind of want to yell it, but I don't want to scare you. So, fool, this night is your soul is required of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be? And that's kind of a slap in the face, right? He's saying, you know, fool, we don't, if you called somebody a fool, they'd probably get fairly upset at you, but I might start crying, actually, if you call me a fool. But, if you know, that's kind of a slap in the face. It's pretty clear how fleeting and how temporary and how non-eternal our possessions are. Jesus says that's not going to last. Your life tonight is even going to be demanded of you. And then what's going to happen to your possessions? What's going to happen to the things that you work so hard for? And the crazy thing is, not maybe the crazy thing is all of those things that we work hard for, all the ways that we try to save or keep or hoard money, especially when we talk about building our wall that we talked about a couple weeks ago, is ultimately when we die and that money gets left to somebody else, right? All that hard work that we put in, it goes to somebody else. We don't get credit for that. We don't get credit for the money that we leave behind. And maybe credit's kind of an odd way to look at it, but I think it's a good way, because we're not gaining anything by leaving it for someone when we die. We're not growing closer to God when we just leave money for when we die, leave money for people when we die. There's not that hope shifting back to God. It's, well, I can't take it with me, someone else may as well have it kind of mentality. Whereas when we give generously, when we give before, when we give when we're able to give, that affects our heart. That affects our relationship with God. My wife's grandma, I think, did a kind of a rather neat thing. As she grew older, Instead of just building an inheritance, instead of just having a bunch of money to give to her 15 kids, she decided she was going to give it to them like during birthdays and anniversaries and Christmases and those kind of things so that she could see them enjoy the money that she had, that she was going to leave them. And so she just had this mentality, okay, I'm going to give you this money so that I can see how you're going to use it. And I think she found joy, and I didn't talk to her about this in particular necessarily, so I don't know for sure, but I think she even found joy in giving it to him, even if they went to pay a bill, even if they went to do something non-exciting like that. She just was excited to be able to give it to them, to be generous with them, because there's something that happens in our heart when we're able to give it. When we're able to hand it out, when we're able to pass it to others, and even again, if they're not using it for something, enjoyable, like if we go out and buy a jet ski with it or something, right? That's more exciting than a jet ski. I don't know anywhere that came from, but a jet ski. I should use TV again instead of a TV, right? We're going to pay a bill, right? There's that mentality that we just see that when that person uses it something and they're able to benefit from what we've given them, there's something in our heart that changes. There's something in our heart that happens. There's a relationship with God that can grow. And so when we're generous and able to give rather than just leave it because we're dead, there's a difference in how we view it in our heart towards it. And so basically this is how Jesus then wraps up his verse. He's just told the fool that he's going to die. When he says this, he kind of turns to us, really. And I can just imagine Jesus talking to the fool, and then all of a sudden he turns to his crowd. He says this, so is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. So is the one who lays up treasure for himself is not rich towards God. And again, I said this last week, I try to say this over and over again. A lot of times we want to be the winners in this story, right? None of us feel like we're the fool, right? None of us are the fool. And I'm not saying any of us are, right? But I am, okay? So we still are so easy to fall into that consumption assumption mentality. It's so easy for us to be the rich man because we get caught up in the things that we receive. We get caught up in what I can use that money for. I found, and I don't know where this is going to go. I thought about doing this. I put on these pants this morning, and I found this in the pants. And I was like, I know someone gave this to me. I have no idea why they gave it to me. So I may have been supposed to pass it on to one of you guys. So if it's for you, you let me know. But, right, when it's so easy to say, okay, well, what am I going to use this $20 for, right? I can go out to eat a couple times, and I can do, I can do a lot of neat things with this. But, and so we when we receive money, we start to think, well, where is it going to go? And when, for me personally and for our family, when it's, our regular income, it's easier. My wife does a great job with budgets and kind of said, this is where money needs to go, and we do pretty good with that. But it's when I find money in my pocket or we get extra money here or there, then I'm like, oh, I'm going to use this for myself. What can I buy for myself? I've been wanting, a TV, apparently. And so that's just how we fall into that mentality of using it for ourselves. And I am that fool. I am the man that Jesus is looking at and saying, what's that going to do for you in the long run? How are you building a foundation for a future with me? With that money, and it's only $20. I'm still trying to decide what I'm going to do with it. If you gave me this $20, you let me know why you gave it to me. That might help too. But I need to be reminded of this all the time, of a forever focus, of an eternal focus, of what am I using my resources, how am I spending my money, so that I am building for myself a relationship with God that will last forever. And I guess that's my challenge for us this morning as we conclude, as we wrap up this series. I just want us to be reminded of these things. And we're going to read one last verse here in Luke 12, just a few verses down. Verse 33 says this. In terms of what can we do, in terms of how we can view our possessions, here's what he says. He says, sell your possessions, give to the needy, provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in heaven that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. And I think the mentality with that is not saying go have a yard sale, right? Because yard sales are just about the extra. He's saying, are there things in your life that you hold on to that you need to be able to let go of? And I think of the finger trap. And I just think of, are there possessions, are there things that I'm holding so tightly to that I just cannot let go of it, that I cannot pull myself away from this? And I was going to buy one for every one of you, but you guys didn't seem to like my clay thing very much, so I decided not to. But Yeah, what am I holding on to? What are my possessions am I gripping on to? Maybe it's not a specific possession, but maybe it's all of my possessions. Maybe it's all of my wealth. Maybe it's all of my income. And the thing about that, and the thing about, like, when we talked about temptation with the kids, is that the only way out of it is to let go of it. The only way out of it is to let go of it. When we loosen our grip on our possessions, when we loosen our grip on our money, then it will lose its grip on us. When we loosen our grip, when we let go of it, then it will let go of us. And I get so caught up, and I think we all get caught up in the mentality of more, of how can I use this for my own good or for my own benefit, rather than being generous and ready to share. And so this morning, I just want to close with the words of a man that I spoke about a few months ago named Jim Elliot. And Jim Elliot, if you remember, was a missionary to South America, to the Auca Indians. And at the end of his life, he was killed on the mission field by those same people that he was trying to reach out to. And at 28 years old, he died on that mission field, but he had such a great perspective on the eternal that he said this. He said, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. Let's pray. Gracious Father, we just pray for those words to be true of us. Instead of being the fool, help us to let go of the things that hold us back. Help us to let go of the things that we think we need. Help us let go of all of this, this money and this struggle that we have with possessions. We pray that we can let it go, we can let you take control, and we can have that focus on you, of spending life with you forever. And we're going to pray this all in your Son, Jesus' name. Amen. Have the worship team come forward this morning, and we're going to stand and have an opportunity for anyone to respond as you feel fit, see fit. Whether it's something about eternal, like we've been talking about, or something just practical that you need prayer for or encouragement for as well. So let's stand. We're going to sing Give Me Jesus.